Hi everyone, I'm Max from AFM. Welcome to the Pilot Training Connect podcast, where we interview individuals from the pilot training industry to learn more about their organization and their views. Every week, we invite an industry leader to sit down with us, and this week, I have the great pleasure to be joined by David Kolber, Director of Aviation Marketing at Resitco. Resitco is a lessor of training aircraft primarily in the United States, and we look forward to learning more about their activities from David. David, welcome to the Pilot Training Connect podcast.
Thanks for having me, Max.
So I know there's huge demand for training aircraft at the moment and for some of the solutions that you're providing. Can you give us an overview of who is Resitco and what services you provide?
Yeah, absolutely. So Resitco is a 40-year-old privately held transportation equipment lessor. So we have two core verticals. One side of that is rail equipment, so rail cars and locomotives in the US. And then we have our aviation vertical. And the aviation side, up until last year, our core focus, and it remains our core focus, is leasing mid to end of life commercial aircraft and engines. However, last year we expanded our product offering by moving into the training space. The pilot shortage is well publicized. We have been hearing from our airline customers for the past several years about the pilot shortage. And so a couple of years ago, we started looking into the training space and how the various training providers, mainly flight schools, are financing their equipment. We learned a lot during that process, and we learned that flight schools do not have the same access to capital and financing structures that airlines do. So we looked at a few of the providers that provide operating leasing structures in that space. And last year we acquired the assets of Brown Aviation Lease, which was a operating leasing company for flight schools. They had 30-ish aircraft on lease to flight schools across the country, a couple orders. And since then, we've grown by placing direct orders with the manufacturers, stepping into orders that other schools have placed, and picking up aircraft on the secondhand market and leasing them to schools. So our key product is the operating lease. It's not a lease back that lots of schools are familiar where the owner has an aircraft, they give it to the local flight school and that flight school manages it and there's a revenue sharing, but the owner has to pay for all costs. This is an operating lease structure, and the flight school in this case is responsible for all costs, but they keep all the revenue. And so it's really tailored for flight schools that fly a lot and are focused on the professional pilot training programs, as opposed to maybe the Part 61 hobbyists, where your aircraft aren't flying that much.
Okay. As you've mentioned, there's a lot of demand for pilots. There's a lot of demand for training aircraft. So if I'm a flight school leader and I have this demand, I know you're offering operating leases. What kind of equipment are you offering operating leases on?
So that's the challenge right now. You and I were just discussing this right before the call. It is very difficult to find aircraft. We have new aircraft coming next year, but they're all committed. So the way that I am growing and providing solutions in the near term is two ways. One is purchase leasebacks from existing schools if they have aircraft that they own that they want to extract capital out of. I've acquired them and leased them back immediately. Alternatively, I have worked with schools to find aircraft on the secondhand market where we step in and acquire, and then upon acquisition, that school leases the aircraft for me. That's really the only way at the moment, given the current huge demand supply imbalance in the aircraft space, that we have to offer schools at the moment.
Okay, and you mentioned it, this interesting dynamic between the demand and supply imbalance. you're very well connected in the space. You are very knowledgeable. Rizitko has done a lot of research in this segment. Why is there this imbalance between demand and supply, specifically maybe also looking at the supply side? Can you share some more industry knowledge on that?
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway is just the size, the composition of the training aircraft fleet. If you just look at data from Gamma and you look at single engine piston deliveries going back to 1962, from 1962 to 1992, a 30-year span, 212,000 single engine piston aircraft were delivered. During that period, at the peak, it was 14 to 15,000 aircraft per year. Between 92 and 2022, only 38,000 were delivered, and 1,500 per year. And if you narrow down within that, those numbers, not all of those aircraft are training aircraft. Some of those are more complex and higher tech models for personal use. So the size of the aged fleet is just massive. And I think we're now in that large replacement cycle, but the manufacturers are not building in the same numbers that they used to. And so it is very difficult to get aircraft. If you're looking for a glass cockpit, any type of aircraft that's been built within the past 20 years, if that aircraft makes it to the market, to a public site at all, it's available for days, if not hours. These aircraft are just getting soaked up instantly.
Yeah. And is that maybe also like one of the great features of Rizitko, that you're a team which is constantly scouring the secondhand market, and whereas maybe some flight training organizations, some flight schools don't have that visibility, and so maybe are able to identify aircraft through you a lot simpler than if they were themselves going out there and trying to scour the globe for specific training aircraft that they might be seeking.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm talking with people every day, both privately and also looking at the public sites, and we're just constantly watching for aircraft and looking for targets to acquire. And so that is one of our strengths. And while our desire is to stick to the newer aircraft on the piston side, we're not opposed to looking at used aircraft within the 20 age range.
Okay. And what about, let's say, once again, I'm a flight school leader, I'm looking to add more training aircraft to my fleet. Is there a minimum and maximum fleet deal size that is of that kind of Rizitko operates in?
No, it depends on the school and the underwriting that we perform. If you're a smaller school, we might start with a one aircraft deal. But if you're a larger, more well-established schools, we have the capability to do significant size deals, 15, 20, 25 aircraft.
Okay. And let's say, once again, I am the same flight school leader, interested to get more training aircraft. I speak to Rizitko about it, or maybe I'm interested to free up some capital of my existing fleet. What are the things that you would kind of look at, other than kind of the underwriting, when it comes to the existing fleet, the operations of the flight school, and such factors?
Yeah, I have a couple key questions that I like to ask flight schools. First and foremost is, what are you charging for your zero to CFI program? And have you increased prices recently? That's a huge factor for me, because we've all experienced it with supply chain issues, inflation, interest rates, costs are going up for everyone. And due to the significant amount of flight schools in this country, I think there's 1,600 private schools, not including the university system, I think that has slowed the ticket price increases for training. And these aircraft are just getting more and more expensive, not even factoring in all your other costs. So I want to see that schools are moving along with, to the extent that they can, with the market in terms of increasing price. I want to see operating history, how long you've operated this school. I'm very curious to know if you have relationships with airlines, the feeder programs, and utilization. Utilization is key on these aircraft. Again, given the cost, you have to be operating 80 plus, 100, ideally 100 plus Hobbs hours a month for it to make sense at these newer aircraft prices.
Yeah. Quite interesting. You make the point on utilization. So just for everyone who's listening and for you, David, to have knowledge on this. At AFM, we're currently running an anonymous survey with flight school leaders globally to get their input on what their actual utilization is per single engine aircraft per month, what they think their maximum utilization is on that aircraft, and what they think the industry benchmark is. We've already started receiving the first inputs, and it is very surprising to see kind of how people view utilization on an equipment which is pretty much the same equipment in the US as it is anywhere else in the world, but of course might have some other operating limitations in regards to it.
I'm very interested to see the results of that survey. I'm holding my breath on that one. I've spoken with schools that claim to operate 150 to 200 hours per month per aircraft, and that's fantastic, but they seem to be that seems to be an outlier from what I've seen. I haven't canvassed the entire flight school community yet though, so I'm not sure. But that's what I would love to see out of at least the professional training pilot organizations, that type of numbers. But I understand, I'm not an operator of a flight school, but I understand the challenges and the maintenance programs of these aircraft. The 100-hour check, puts you down, and the intervals on these engines are not as great as commercial aircraft engines. I certainly understand and respect the challenges of operating at a cadence like that. And you're bound by the weather, which is another challenge. So,
yeah. So I can already give some a couple of indications of this based on the preliminary input that we've received. Flight schools, once again, this is on a global level, which are utilizing the aircraft at the lower end of the scale, 50 to 60 hours, and they think that, or they target a target utilization, and they think where the industry benchmarks is at 75 hours per aircraft, per single engine aircraft per month. And then similar to, I can just echo what you've just said, on the other end of the extreme, we have seen some which are operating 200 plus hours per month per single engine aircraft. So really a wide kind of range, but we will put it out on AFM fairly shortly. For Resitco, you mentioned that Resitco now has been active in this specifically flight training operating lease space for over a year and a half. Can you just share with everyone listening, how has the uptake been, your current profile of customers? Because you've mentioned also in terms of deal size, there's not, you're fairly open to having discussions with flight training organizations on different deal sizes. So what are the different profiles of flight schools that have kind of worked with Resitco?
Our customers, without naming them, range from smaller private flight schools, but are focused on the professional pilot training, up to major university clients. And we work with both of those segments, and each of them have their unique aspects. Working with major universities, sometimes if they're publicly funded, have unique requirements that are challenging to address, but we find our way around that. And the private segment is also interesting. They have their own set of challenges. if we just look at the overall global aviation sector, airlines right now are doing fantastic. Revenue is up, profit is up, they've recovered from COVID. Traffic is not quite pre-COVID levels, but because of the lack of capacity, they're doing quite well. The private schools, from the financials I've seen, again, I've only seen a limited subset, that recovery has not shown yet in the financials. I'm hearing lots of good news this year about record numbers of intakes of students, but I haven't seen it yet in the financials, and I hope to see it soon. And that goes back to more my comment about, is the pricing correct for this training environment that we're in, where the airlines are just desperate for pilots, and how can they help support schools possibly financially?
David, once again, I can only echo what you've said. The recovery in terms of a large part of the flight training industry from a financial sustainability standpoint I haven't seen it yet based on financials that I've seen. I've actually seen on a global level, especially in countries where they don't have the 1500 hour rule, like in the US, that when there was an increase in training, because the training wasn't sold at above cost point, actually the training was being done at a loss on a per student basis, which then, puts the flight training organizations more into debt, deteriorates their balance sheet. And yeah. I've seen quite a few schools close across the world due to financial unsustainability, or due to them having enough students, them having enough aircraft, but them not having enough flight instructors.
Yeah.
So it is a really interesting time. You, as a lessor of training aircraft, when you look at the kind of key challenges that flight training organizations might be facing over the coming year to 2 years, what are kind of the key critical areas that you're seeing?
Putting aside getting your hands on aircraft, which we already discussed, some of the same issues that you just mentioned, it's keeping and retaining instructors. That's a huge issue. As soon as an instructor hits 1500, boom, they're gone. Even mechanics. We talk about the pilot shortage all the time, but there's a huge mechanic shortage out there. And if you are a flight school in a large city that happens to have a large airline nearby, you're competing against airline wages for your mechanics, and that's really difficult. So keeping staff on board is challenging, and obviously you potentially have to increase pay, yet another cost input that goes up. Lead times on maintenance is still extremely challenging. Engines, you almost have to plan for engine overhauls a year in advance, something that I don't think was quite the case pre-COVID. Typically I don't have to touch the aircraft that we own, but I have one aircraft on the ground right now, and just trying to get some light maintenance done has been pulling teeth, just calling various shops. I'm willing to fly it anywhere. The best response I got this week was maybe someone could look at it in a month, but some people were, 6 to 8 months before they were even willing to look at it for just some very light maintenance. So it's challenging out there to get support for these schools, and you have to have a well-run machine as a flight school, and do as much of the maintenance in-house so you can control some of these variables.
To give you a couple of indicators from a global perspective as well, for engine overhaul before the pandemic, let's say 2017, 2018, for single engine, certain type of engines, you're looking at around like combing engine, you're looking at around like 25 to 30,000 US for an engine overhaul.
Yeah.
Now I know in the US it's high 30s touching 40s.
Yeah.
Globally, so this is something quite interesting. Globally, still a lot of training organizations are sending their engines for overhaul to the US, or to certain developed nations. And there's the shipping on top of that. Plus, there's also a premium that is being charged by engine overhaul facilities for those customers. So you've had pretty much the doubling of engine overhaul costs for a lot of countries which are not, in the US or in other certain areas of the world, which once again is leading to financial unsustainability within the flight training sector, which once again then means the US has a key advantage because it has enough flight instructors due to the 1500-hour rule, and it is close to the supply chain, to the origin of the supply chain. So I think flight schools in the US are going to see an increasing amount of demand, not only from the US, but international, and will need an increasing amount of training aircraft.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good time to be a maintenance provider at the moment.
Yeah. So, where do you see Resitco in 2 to 3 years' time?
Where I see us versus where I want to be is a little bit different, again, just due to the challenge of getting aircraft. We have contracted deliveries for next year of 26. We don't have anything for 25. We have a dozen for 2026. So that'll take us up into the 70s. So any other additional growth, is pipeline growth that we'll have to develop, and would love to be north of 100 aircraft, if not larger. We have the capability to be much larger than that. It's just trying to find the right deals. We're not growing for the sake of growth. We still have to find, deals that make sense and, for both us and our, customers. And that's a challenge right now, especially on the secondhand market. I mentioned it before, but we are seeing dynamics on these assets that we have not seen in our 40-year operating history for aviation or rail assets. To see aircraft appreciate over such a long period of time or vintage is something that we've never witnessed before. We've seen appreciation in small gaps. Maybe there was exogenous event, aircraft values went down. If you picked them up at the time and then, demand recovered, great, big increase in values. However, for 10, 12-year-old aircraft to sell well over their original purchase price, or even the aircraft built in the 70s and 80s trading over and above their original purchase price, never seen that in transportation equipment before. And that's a unique situation to be in. There's good data points to suggest that that will continue, but it's, you're walking on a tightrope. And we just, we have to adjust to that and see if it makes sense. It's nothing we've ever built into our business model where you have appreciation on an inherently an asset that goes down to zero, especially in the training environment where there's, a lot more time put on these aircraft versus a privately owned aircraft that's, flies 50 hours a year. So I think we're learning as we go a little bit, and we're being cautious.
Okay. It is fascinating. I have to say it is. It almost sounds like a great new investment, alternative investment class. Mm-hmm. My final question to you, David, is for flight schools which are looking to grow their fleet, but mm-hmm. which might not have the capital to do it right now. When is the best time for them to reach out to you to discuss their fleet growth plans?
Right away. We need to. Most of the manufacturers are sold out through 2025. They're selling into 2026. If you place a large enough order, you might get some earlier slots. But if you're trying to do 5-10 aircraft, you're talking 2026 at this point for the big guys, and the small newer guys, or maybe the manufacturers that are popular in Europe, but not so much in the U.S. You can get aircraft a little bit sooner. So if you're not looking for large quantities. However, the U.S. training environment are dominated by the 3-4 major manufacturers. So It requires getting comfortable with a new asset type and making sure that you can support it. And so that requires a lot of planning. And I think that's been a shift as well in terms of the lead times of getting aircraft. If you're looking for new aircraft, to plan three years out. I don't think that was the case again pre-COVID, but that's, you know, something we see all the time on the commercial side. We're not buyers of brand new commercial aircraft, but you know, lead times for that go to the end of the decade. So that's the way the airlines have to think about it. And so flight schools are now starting to get into that territory a little bit.
Okay. And how can flight school leaders reach you? How can they get in contact with you?
So right now, the best way is through our main website, www.residco.com. It's got my email and phone number. We are going to separate the brand for our piston activity, and we're going to have a new website for that coming out in the next couple of months. And then, you know, that's, you know, more customer, you know, facing. And so we will differentiate the brands of the piston leasing versus our core activities of, you know, the commercial aircraft space and the rail side.
Okay. Fantastic. David, thank you so much for sharing your insights with everyone who's listening and myself today. Really fascinating. And just to reiterate again, if anyone is looking for more training aircraft, the best time to contact David is right now when you're listening, because each and every day that you wait might add not just a day, but potentially weeks or months or years, longer, until you get that aircraft. Thank you very much, David.
Thank you, Max.